Life Audio.
Hey there, friend. Heather Creekmore here. Glad you're listening to the Compare To podcast today. Last time we started talking about what I learned when I clicked on all the masterclasses that I saw come by through my Facebook feed. You know, all those ads, all those reels that promise they'll tell me the secret to weight loss, the secret to healing my thyroid, the secret to healing my autoimmune disease, the secret to optimal health. And so instead of scrolling past, I clicked. And you know what happens when you click on Facebook? You get more. And so I clicked and I clicked and I clicked. And last time and today, I'm telling you what I learned. Last time we talked about some of the science and how it varied from influencer to influencer and what other suggestions that they had, how they varied as well. Today, we're going to dig into the food. But before we do that, I just want to point something out to you. I've been making a list of things that are harmful to one's health, right? Because we all want to be healthy. We want to be good stewards of the bodies God's given us. So let's try to do things healthy. Are you ready for this list? Friend, it's going to make you laugh. Here are all the things that I've written down that can hurt your health and or make you gain weight. The chemicals in your water. Not drinking enough water. Not exercising. Exercising too much. Drinking alcohol. Avoiding a glass of red wine a day, not sleeping enough, sleeping too much, being stressed out, not having enough to do in your life, mold, metal in your fillings, mercury in your tuna fish, lead paint, toothpaste, not brushing your teeth, antibacterial soap, rare communicable diseases that get in from not washing your hands well enough, using hot water to wash your hands, BPA in plastics, cleaning with bleach, not keeping your home clean from germs, nonstick cookware, not eating at home, eating non-organic fruits and vegetables, not eating fruits and vegetables, not getting vaccinated, eating all day long, intermittent fasting, drinking soda, being dehydrated, drinking coffee, not getting enough vitamin D, getting too much sun, too much salt, not having enough sodium, dryer sheets, aerosol sprays, nail polish. Need I go on? Oh, friends, the list probably could go on, but I hope, like me, you're laughing instead of crying because this pursuit of optimal health, oh, goodness, it's a treadmill that does not stop, just like the pursuit of a better body, right? And so while there are ways we can be wise in how we care for our bodies and the things that we do surrounding our health, friend, it's way too much pressure to wear on our own. So today we're going to dig back into what I learned in these masterclasses, and I hope you'll keep that in mind. Hey, if this is your first time checking out the Compare To podcast, go to improvebodyimage.com and you'll learn more about me and the books I've written and really what this podcast is all about, because these two episodes might feel really confusing, but mostly we talk about body image and encouraging women who have body image struggles or food struggles as to how they can find freedom in Jesus Christ. And so that's where we're normally at, and you can find the best episodes to listen to encouragement on that front at improvebodyimage.com/podcast. Now let's get to today's show. Welcome to Compare To Who, the podcast to help you make peace with your body so you can savor God's rest and feel His love. If you're tired of fighting body image the world's way, Compare To Who is the show for you. You've likely heard lots of talk about loving your body, but my goal is different. Striving to fall in love with stretch marks and cellulite is a little silly to me. Instead, I want to encourage you and remind you with the truth of Scripture that you are seen, you are known, and you are loved no matter what your size or shape. Here, the pressure is off. If you're looking for real talk, biblical encouragement, and regular reminders that God loves you and you're not alone, you've come to the right place. I hope you enjoy today's show, and hey, tell a friend about it. Like I said, I did watch the one masterclass all 7 days so I could get to the one about food. And boy, when I got there, I was discouraged and kind of wish I hadn't gotten there. Now, I'm going to put a trigger alert here, right? Because I'm going to talk about a doctor's suggested diet plan, and this is all about restriction. So if hearing restriction recommendations that come from a doctor, if that's triggering to you, just forward, just press that 30-second forward button 4 times and we'll be through it by then. So this doctor suggested that you eat in a way that actually I ate probably, I don't know, 15 years ago. I did a program called The Virgin Diet. It was one of the many diets that I tried. The Virgin Diet was written by an author whose name is J.J. Virgin, and she had you cut out like seven major like foods that could be allergens, that could be sensitivities or allergens. And so this doctor's recommendation was that you cut out five, that you cut out gluten, dairy, soy, corn, and sugar. And then what she asked for is that you be 100% committed, 100% committed, and that she won't work with anyone who is not willing to absolutely cut out these five things. And she goes off on this tangent about how people tell her that they've tried being gluten-free, but then they say that they ate gluten-free foods, and no, that's not what it's about. She wants you to give up all grains. You pretty much just eat meat and vegetables. And when I think about seeing her before and after her, you know, her amazing stories of transformation, right? I couldn't help but think that these women have been forced to cut out gluten, dairy, soy, corn, and sugar for, and some of them, they said it takes a while. So some of them had been doing it for a year or 2 years. Like, yeah, okay, they are much thinner. But I do wonder if they've all developed eating disorders, because they are given these rules absolutely without any grace or lenience whatsoever. I mean, she said several times, like, if you cheat, you don't work with me anymore. So you have to follow the diet perfectly. Now, I know some of you might be saying, like, well, that sounds pretty healthy to me. Like, if I could give up all those foods, maybe I'd be healthier. And I hear you, but I don't know that you would be healthier mentally or spiritually, and I can't even promise you that you would be healthier physically, because I know what happened for me when I was on the Virgin Diet years ago was that I eventually developed a sensitivity and allergy to turkey, because turkey was like one of the only things that I could eat that was accessible and easy for me to grab. Because I had four little kids and I couldn't like stop and make myself a chicken breast or a hamburger. So I would just eat turkey. And eventually I developed such a sensitivity to it that I couldn't handle turkey anytime, anywhere. It would make me like choke. So I don't know that you always get the results that they're promising when you are restricting your foods to just those certain things. And again, I'm not qualified. I don't have a dietitian's license or a degree in this to call it disordered eating or to call it an eating disorder. So this is just my opinion. But this doctor told a story of a neighbor showing up at her home with warm chocolate chip cookies, and it was to welcome them to a new neighborhood. And her response, apparently she was very gracious to the neighbor. I'm not saying she was rude to the neighbor at all, but she closed the door and her response was, though, she doesn't know us very well. And her son, she said, was there too. And her son said, Mom, you're going to throw those cookies away, aren't you? And she said, you're absolutely right. And she put them right in the trash. Okay, now let me pause for a second here. If your neighbor makes you something to eat and you don't like it, you are free to do with it whatever you like. You don't have to eat it. You can be hospitable and kind, and then you have no moral obligation to eat the cookies or the vegetable lasagna or whatever your neighbor has brought you. I mean, if my neighbor brings me tofu, like, I'm not going to eat it. Okay, so you have no moral obligation to eat whatever someone has made for you. Okay, so hear me clear and loud on that. But then she takes it one step further on the topic of these cookies. She calls the chocolate chip cookies rat poison. And she says she has no problem not eating them because to her, they are rat poison. And they will keep her from living to 120. And she doesn't eat rat poison. And as I heard this, I felt a little jolted for a minute. Like, it really messed with me. I thought, wow, like, if it's that bad for my body, boy, if she thinks it's that bad for my body, it does seem kind of crazy to eat it. But then I jolted myself back to reality. Eating rat poison would be a legitimately bad thing. But cookies and rat poison are not the same. They aren't. Now, I'm not saying that cookies have the nutritional value of broccoli, but there are some nutrients in cookies and they can satisfy hunger and taste hunger, right? They're good. They taste good and they're not completely nutritionally void. Beyond this, I Googled what happens to you if you eat rat poison. Would you like to know what happens? You die, or you have all these bad symptoms, and then you die. Okay, you do not die if you eat a cookie. To equate eating a cookie to death is disordered. Again, I don't have the degrees to diagnose anyone here, but it does certainly sound like an eating disorder or orthorexia if you have to play this mental trick on yourself and think about food in such severe black and white terms, right? Oh, it's mental bondage. It's not freedom. There's also some classism here, right? Not everyone can afford to eat only organic meats and vegetables. Some people are just not going to get enough calories that way because they don't have enough access to that much food. And so to be told that you're eating rat poison or you're killing yourself or you're limiting your lifespan because you're not only eating the foods that she suggests, like, oh, friends, does that stir in us a spirit of humility or a spirit of pride? Like, if I'm able to do that, let's say I can't afford it and I'm able to do it and somehow I pull it off, do I feel superior to others? Or do I have more grace and compassion for others? I think it's probably the first one. I'm going to feel like I'm better than you because I'm doing it all right. And sorry, you're not doing it right. Shame on you for not getting your act together with food. Or too bad that you don't have enough money to get to. Like, oh, friend, I don't think that's to be our attitude or our hearts around food or the ways we eat. In fact, I mean, to be really edgy here, I wonder if that isn't a better definition of gluttony, where I live to eat a certain way and the way I eat is the most important thing to me. And the way I eat and my rules and my ideas around food are so important that I don't have the ability to care for others well when they're hungry. Because, oh goodness, I've got it all right in this area and you've got it wrong. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Something to think about, right? Let's talk about that more right after this quick break.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
So to then offer a completely different perspective on food, enter an article that one of the doctors I mentioned that I follow sent me. He didn't send it just to me. He sent it to his whole list. But in it, he decided to study what Americans ate 100 years ago. And in order to do this study, he examined lots and lots of cookbooks from the early 1900s. And it was super fascinating. And so he, I don't know how many cookbooks he looked at, but many, many, many from this country. And I think also from like the UK. And his thesis was that, well, first of all, he wanted to set the stage because people often believe that we live longer now and that we live longer now because we are smarter around our food. But he didn't believe that the life expectancy difference was as much as we've been told it is. And the way he explained it was this: they had a lot more infant mortality then. And so with a higher number of, you know, children and babies dying, when you figure out life expectancy, you kind of average, you know, the higher numbers with this massive quantity of lower numbers, and that brings the life expectancy number down. But the data is skewed because there were so many kids that died. But it's not really fair to say that people didn't live as long back then. So this article was super interesting. It was very long, but he extrapolated just some general overview points about what he learned about the way they eat based on these recipes. And the first thing he noted was how they used a variety of parts of the animal. Like, it wasn't just the chicken breast or certain cuts of meat, but they ate the organ meat. They ate a variety of meats too. Like, they ate pork and lamb and just a wide variety. He also talks about how, I liked this one, and it made me think of my grandparents, but how they often had a homemade dessert every evening. I mean, both sets of grandparents. I had one set of grandparents that lived on a dairy farm, and another set of grandparents that lived in the city, downtown Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And both of them, this was the way they ate. There was a homemade dessert made every evening and enjoyed after dinner. And he talks about how if you're eating the way that these cookbooks and just like the other research he did, if you're eating the way that it looked like they were eating, they were probably getting well over 3,000 calories a day. But he also talks about how metabolically they were so much more flexible than we are today. And I just wonder, this was me adding this, not him, but we've been under eating since we started dieting 40 or 50 years ago, since we started chasing a smaller number on the scales, since we started chasing a certain body ideal presented to us in media, which again, wasn't as common because we didn't even have television really till the 1950s, right? So maybe even 50, 60 years ago, but we started dieting, and I wonder if that is what has created our metabolic problems. Like, metabolic issues, that's the real cause of diabetes, not sugar, right? But I wonder if we have messed with ourselves metabolically through all this dieting. But back to how he talked about their eating, he said they enjoyed meats, they enjoyed carbohydrates, they enjoyed fruit, they enjoyed vegetables, they enjoyed fat, and they enjoyed sugar at almost every meal. And he talks about how, and we've talked about this on the show, and it's in my 40-day body image workbook, they were satisfied because they ate a wide variety of foods. And often they ate seasonally, or if it was winter, they ate things they canned or preserved for the winter. But they ate a big variety and a delicious variety. It wasn't just rice cakes and lettuce hold the dressing and plain broccoli and chicken breast. You all know what I mean. They ate good food prepared in a variety of ways, and they enjoyed it. You know, I saw something go by on Instagram the other day about why Italians don't have a weight problem. And the quick thesis there was kind of the same. Like, they take time to prepare delicious food. They enjoy a wide variety of foods. They don't make the same meatloaf on Mondays, tacos on Tuesdays, grilled chicken on Wednesdays. Like, they eat a wide variety of intricate foods with lots of different ingredients, and they enjoy it. It's delicious, and they're satisfied. He also talked about how they ate around the same times every single day. They ate their three square meals. He didn't really go into whether or not they had snacks. But there was a little quote he had from someone who, I think it was like commentary in one of the cookbooks, but it was about how you should never serve dinner late, because serving dinner late, and I'm butchering this beautiful quote, but it was like, even a half an hour to an hour late will only result in two things. It will result in the food not being enjoyed and everyone being in a bad mood. And I thought, spot on, right? Like, when we're over hungry and trying to throw something on the table because everyone's starving, and especially if you're the one that was like working all day and didn't get to eat all day, right? You're starving, and you throw something on the table and, oh, you don't enjoy it. You're too hungry to enjoy it, right? And you're maybe too grumpy to enjoy it too. You're just trying to bring your body back to steady state by getting some food in it. So I thought that was really amazing too. But to go back to these health influencers, to just kind of zoom back a second. One health influencer tells me that I only need to eat vegetables and chicken breasts so I'll never ever get a disease. And another one tells me that maybe we had it right 100 years ago and your grandma's homemade banana pudding that has sugar and dairy and gluten in it probably isn't that bad for you. Like, which one do you believe? Okay, here's another example. One of the influencers said that you should eat bacon and avocado as soon as you wake up. And a big mistake you're making is to have smoothies, because a fruit smoothie, when the fruit gets blended up in the blender, the glucose gets spread all throughout and it makes your blood sugar spike more. Now, when I told my husband this, he was like, but isn't that what happens when you chew? It gets all like blended up. So anyway, but it was like, one influencer, start your day with a smoothie. The other influencer, don't start your day with a smoothie or you'll die. Right? Like, it's enough to drive a person mad. Like, I was like, well, maybe I should just put the avocado and bacon into my smoothie and then I'm doing it all. I don't know. But then, and there's the comments, right? So you've got these masterclasses, these videos, you know, you click through the link, you sign up, but then there's comments below. And what I found, y'all, is that everyone on Facebook is an expert on health. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments. And what's so funny is, I mean, it's a program on health by a quote unquote expert, but people are replying to it saying how it's either wrong or, you know, how like they're partially right, but they're doing like they're saying it wrong and they need to actually add this too, right? Like, we are such quote unquote experts on all this health knowledge we have that we are not afraid to get on Facebook and tell these doctors they've got it wrong, because what worked for me was drinking turnip juice and taking the supplement four times a day. And there were fights that are breaking out in these Facebook comments. I mean, you know how that goes, but fights like, no, you should never eat that. Yes, you should always eat that. I gave that up for a while, but now I eat. And it's like, stop the madness. And why this is so interesting to me is because it shows how we are so attached to our health beliefs. Like, we really believe that what worked for us will work for everyone. And even if it's not working for us, we still believe in it. And we may believe in it more than we believe in Jesus, because a tiny little part of us is hoping that it will save us. And then again, what we're really doing is we're making health an idol, and we're willing to try anything and do anything and everything to serve it so we get what it offers us. And what it offers us is our life, or it offers to give us our life back. I heard that language a lot in these masterclasses. Like, you've lost your life because you've lost your health. So here's how you get your life back. But health doesn't own our lives. God does. And again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with trying to do things that make you feel better in your body. Maybe there is a food that's really making you sick, and if you cut it out, maybe you will feel better. Again, that's not within my purview to say. I'm not an expert on that. I'm only speaking from experience here. As someone who's come out of an eating disorder, this is really difficult to navigate. When all these influencers tell me to cut out foods, it certainly can trigger me right back to eating disorder thoughts, eating disorder behaviors. And so for me, as I'm listening to these doctors talk about their programs, I think, okay, this sounds reasonable. I don't want to get Alzheimer's. I don't want to get type 2 diabetes. Oh, but then if the only way to do this is to cut out all these foods and make this my new religion, and because she kept saying over and over again, like, I won't work with you unless you make this your first priority. I thought, no, I can't do that. I cannot make this my first priority. God, my family, that's what has to be my first priority. These things come first. To be a good steward of my body cannot mean this. It cannot mean that I have to become obsessed with my health. And maybe someone can do it. Maybe you're listening and you can do it. Maybe you can pull different foods out and you can tweak the things and exercise like they say. Maybe you can pull it off. But I'm just saying from my experience, I can't. And I've tried and I can't. And I've also believed that maybe there were people who could do it because they were just better than me and they had more willpower or discipline or something than I did, and maybe I should be one of them, but I could just never get it to work. And here's the rub, friends. The challenge is some of us are really suffering In fact, I'd say most of the women listening to these master classes advertised on social media, they weren't just women who wanted to lose weight. They were women who were suffering and they want relief. And I get it. When we're suffering, we do. We want answers. We live in a culture that believes because we have so much access to information that all of the answers are here. We just have to go on this crazy scavenger hunt, but someday we're going to find the answers. We're going to find the golden ticket, the solution. We're going to be able to do everything just right, and then our suffering will end. And we all want this. We all want the suffering to end. We don't want to suffer. And for some of us, let's just be fair, some of us, you will find some answers if you pursue this. Like maybe you will realize that eating dairy was causing your digestive issues and you cut out dairy and you feel better. Of course, like that does work. I'm not completely dismissing that. But for others of us, our bodies are way more complicated and we cut something out and it might work for a while, but then it doesn't work anymore. And then we cut more things out and then maybe we have to start taking pills. And then maybe we get frustrated because we were supposed to be able to cut the things out and stop taking the pills. And I think we're just right back to diet culture. We're right back to, if you're suffering, we've got a promise for you. The promise is just do this and then your suffering will end. And if your suffering doesn't end, well, sorry, you must not have done everything just perfectly right. You must need to find a new plan. Or maybe it's just you've done too much bad in your past. You've just ruined it already. And you don't have a chance because some people were able to stop their suffering and live their best life. But I'm sorry, that hasn't applied to you. Friend, like there's a bit of a false gospel here. I don't think anyone can promise us a life free of suffering. And because suffering hurts, it makes sense that we want relief, that we're trying, willing to do anything and everything. I don't blame anyone for that. But it's a lot of pressure, and it requires us to live a life where we believe that it's all up to me, that it's all on me, that I control my destiny. And I don't think that's biblical. And I think we distort the concept of stewardship when we turn it into that. Because it's stewardship, like really, that's the principle. We don't have a verse that says thou shalt be a good steward of your body, but that's the biblical principle that compels us as Jesus followers to take care of our bodies. We want to be good stewards of our bodies. But let me just use a money illustration to kind of show how we can take this too far. What is our obligation as we take care of our money? Right? Do I have to spend every minute thinking about my accounts, moving money from high growth account to high growth account, watching the markets, pull out of investments that might be turning, always shopping for the best interest rate? Should I commit my whole life to making sure that I take care of my money in a way that I will make the most money possible? Should the goal of stewarding my money be to make me rich? I don't think so. But to carry this analogy even further, like we can try to do everything right with our money and the market can still crash. The bank can go belly up. You can lose it all in a bad investment. You can do everything right and still have it go wrong. Being a good steward of your money means that you are tending to it the best you can, but leaving the results up to God. And that best you can language gets so fuzzy, right? But best you can doesn't mean obsessing over it. Best you can doesn't mean making it your first priority. Best you can doesn't mean that this is all you think about every day, because then you are missing out on what your life's about. And back to the money or your body, ultimately it's his money and ultimately it's his body. Your body is his. You take care of it while you live your life. You live on purpose for a purpose. You do what God has called you to do. You live for him. You love him. You love others. You're serving. You're using your gifts. You take care of your money and you take care of your body as things that are on the list of things that you take care of. But this is not the reason that you live. Friends, stewardship should not be all-consuming. And so if you've been on a quest, if you've watched all the master classes, if you've gone from, I don't chase diets anymore, now that I'm 50 or 40 or 60 or 70, I chase health. And you find yourself right back on that same treadmill of do this, don't do this, follow this plan, then you won't get type 2 diabetes, follow this plan, then you won't get Alzheimer's. I've got to do this. I got to take this supplement. I got to eat this food. I can't eat that food. I've got to exercise at this time. Oh, friend, just recognize where you've landed. And then do some praying and do some Bible searching and do some heart searching and ask the Lord. Maybe there are things you can clean up in the way you live, but that doesn't mean you have to go orthorexic. There are many things we can do to improve our health that have nothing to do with food or exercise, right? Make sure you get enough sleep. Are you drinking enough water? Do you have community? Do you have friends? How much television are you watching? How much social media are you consuming? Are you going outside, right? How's your stress? How's your relationship with alcohol? Are you smoking? There's so many different things we can do to help improve our health that don't have anything to do with cutting out half of the foods that you normally eat. So to close, I kind of wanted to give you some like practical ways. Like, you guys are getting these ads in your social media feeds just like I am. And it's hard to know, right? If you have a thyroid issue, if you have autoimmune disease, like, you're looking for answers. And it's hard to know, like, is this a program that maybe would help me? I don't want to dismiss every program out there. But I asked my friends, all of my non-diet dietitian friends, and some others, like, how they would help their clients distinguish choosing a program that could actually maybe help you get healthier from a program that will end up feeling more like something you did as a diet. So here are some suggestions. Here's what you should watch for. Any program that requires a strict all or nothing approach to eating or requires you to eat only like their food, like their company's foods or their packaged foods, their processed foods, their whatever foods. If it requires you to eat only their foods most of the day, that's probably not a program that's actually going to help you get healthier. We could also add to that, that if they say when you cut out this food, you always have this result, or when you do this plan, you always have this result. Like, most experienced doctors know that there's no such thing in the world of treating bodies that it will always be the same. There's always variables. So I'd watch out for that too. Number two, any program that promises quick results and that promises the exact same results for every single person that does it. Now, you'll find a lot of programs will have pictures and then have a disclaimer to say that not everyone gets the same results. That's how they cover themselves from being sued or having people say, hey, this didn't work for me, I want my money back. What's their loudest message is that if you do this, then you will get these results too. And if there's not an announcement of variables that not everyone gets this to work for them, then I would maybe be a little cautious of that. Number three, anything that simplifies weight loss and health issues to eat less than you exercise or restrict certain food groups and foods, and then everything will change. Friends, not everything will change if you do one thing for your health. Maybe something could change, but everything, it's highly doubtful that everything will change. Number four, any plan that simplifies complex health issues down to weight loss. And we hear doctors say this way too much, but just lose weight and then your diabetes will go away. Or, you know, just lose weight and then you won't have this problem or this problem or this problem. Like, most of our health issues are way more complex than that. So if their lead is healthy weight loss or weight loss freedom, like, if they're leading with weight loss, you know, we're just right back to square one with the promise of a diet. But this time it's not just weight loss, it's the promise of weight loss and the health results you've been looking for. As I think we're starting to see as a culture, right? Because weight loss fails for 96% of people. If weight loss is the only recommended cure for, let's say, your diabetes, and you lose the weight and maybe you do see some improvement in your diabetes for a little while, what do you do when the weight comes back and the diabetes comes back? Has the underlying cause or the root cause even been addressed in that? It hasn't. Oh, friends, it's so tricky. And so much grace and compassion to you if you've clicked on it, if you've bought the class, if you've tried the things. Oh, I get it. The temptation is real because our desire to not suffer or to be healthy or to be our quote unquote best selves or to lose weight. Those desires are real desires. They're real longings. I'm not dismissing them. But friend, we do have to be careful. We do have to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves, because some of the things that our culture is trying to sell us is going to lead us maybe not just to poorer health results, but may also lead us away from the one true gospel. It may lead us to follow diets or programs that become so all-consuming that we miss out on what life is really about. And friend, you know, this life, it's going to be short, right? When I think about what's ahead, I have all of eternity to celebrate not having any pain in my body and not having to worry about what I weigh or what I eat or any of those things, right? I've got that for all of eternity. So whatever suffering is here, it is just for a short while. And I don't want to waste the limited time I have here on the earth, the limited time I have really to store up my treasure in heaven. I don't want to waste that so focused on myself and my health and my body that I miss doing what's really important, that I miss living the way God has called me to live, doing what he's called me to do, loving others, telling others about him, and living for him. And I hope you feel the same. Hey, thanks for listening. I really hope something today has helped you stop comparing and start living. Bye-bye. The Compare To Show is proud to be part of the Life Audio Podcast Network. For more great Christian podcasts, go to lifeaudio.com.
I'm Dr. Lauren DeVille, a practicing naturopathic physician in Tucson, Arizona. In my podcast, Christian Natural Health, my guests and I discuss topics ranging from nutrition, sleep, hormone balancing, and exercise to specific health concerns like hair loss, anxiety, and hypothyroidism. I'll also interweave biblical principles as they apply throughout the podcast, because true health is body, mind, and spirit. Listen to Christian Natural Health for free at lifeaudio.com or on your favorite podcast platform.